sets, which we've essentially already mentioned already. So the first general idea is that we try to view parallel computing as a special case of distributed computing with low latency and tight synchronization. The critical idea of this sort of bottom-up approach, the use of the web for HPCC software infrastructure, is essentially software engineering. The claim would be that the web has the world's greatest information system, which information system is getting better and better. And the one thing we must get from the web is the ability to build software systems that are just much easier to use, which link information with computing, and provide both, that's true for both the software development process and the software deployment process, the use of these programs. And, you know, that can be, I mean, a trivial example of software engineering and the development process. Many people have in fact, been implemented in Java, many by Sun, I believe, in their standard release, is that when you have programs, you can easily use web technology to effectively automatically generate hyperlinks for subroutine calls, which either take you back to where it was called or give you the documentation of the subroutine. So you can use hyperlinking technology to annotate programs to make the actual use of these programs, development of these processes, a much faster process. Now, I must admit, this field keeps changing, and my foils are always out of date. So I never say anything as precisely as I on these foils as I like. So the other thing we have to remember is the limitations of today's technology, some of which are intrinsic and some of which are not so intrinsic, some of which are just accidents of the implementations. So there's some things you can do today with essentially no improvements of the technology. So, and this is what the last bullet said. So independent of whether or not we can use the web to do parallel CFD or what have you, we can undoubtedly use the web to do what I call embarrassingly parallel applications. That means when you have parallelism coming from essentially independent execution of different jobs. There's an example we'll do of the RSA factoring application, which one of some sort of which we did a year ago, and various Monte Carlo programs have some of that feature. So there's actually a lot of applications where the parallelism is essentially independent parallelism, for which therefore the bandwidth limitations of the web are not a serious problem. I once did a survey 7 years ago, which says that embarrassingly parallel applications were 10% of all parallel applications. I don't know if that's true, but they're neither zero nor dominant. There's some modest number, interesting but modest number. There is another more important class of applications, which even subsumes the embarrassingly parallel applications, which I call coarse-grained software integration. So that's the class of application where you have a lot of components, modules, linked together in some fashion. So the manufacturing foils I skipped over had some examples of that, where you had a geometry module linked to a structural model, linked to a CFD module, linked to an optimization module, linked to an electromagnetic scattering module. Large modules. The web is suitable for that for two reasons. The web is naturally a data flow model, which is the natural model for such programming. And because it's coarse-grained, it's not always true, but it's typically true that the communication over compute ratio tends to be small for such large module integration. This is task parallelism, if you like. Whereas when you have, you know, if you're doing the inner loop of your CFD program, that you're sending small messages and you need low latency, and that's very different from a whole CFD program sending data to a structural program, which is huge messages. Latency doesn't really matter. Bandwidth may matter, depends on the application. So I have a claim that today, and this is sort of what we try to do with this project called Webflow, which you were handed a sent a more up-to-date handout on. You gave everybody a Webflow, Merrick? They should all have this. So Webflow is meant to be coarse-grained software integration / data flow using web technology. And I would claim, I wouldn't claim we'll succeed, but I would claim that's a reasonable idea because it's not automatically vetoed by the features of the web. Whereas I think it's sort of obvious that we can't do the innards of a CFD program at the moment using this technology. At least not in the way we want to use Webflow. Next file. All right, so this gives you a bunch of URLs, of which the top one is the most important. This web-based HPCC URL is meant to have all the projects we've tried and failed or stopped and started and still going where we're trying to use web technology in computing. This CareWeb one is this database project I mentioned. Next. All right, so this gives you various, this yet again makes some general comments. So these files are not organized as well as I would like. It's because this field and what we do keeps changing so rapidly. All right. So we already mentioned Embarrassingly Parallel. In the general area of coarse-grained software integration, there is one obvious example, which I forgot to mention in my coarse-grained integration, that's linking a database with a compute engine. So I won't go into a detail, but an example we built once was financial modeling on demand, where the database has stock prices and your big compute engine, which actually did run on a parallel machine, accessed that database using web technology, and then it actually ran as a standard MPI parallel program on the SP2. So an example of coarse-grained integration is where one of the modules is a database. Now, Java can be used in actually three different ways. The one way, which I will not, I think, discuss anymore because I did it already, was Java for scientific computing. So this is Java as the programming language for everything. That's one application of Java, which is not the deployment application of today, but will be, in my opinion, the deployment application probably 3 to 5 years from now. That's, I guess, possibly my optimistic. That's my estimate for when the next generation of children will come into schools knowing Java so fluently they will use it for everything. The next application of Java is as a user interface. Now that I view as a highly promising use of Java that we can do today and includes within it this concept of Java as a wrapper, user wrapper. So actually my model for getting traditional Fortran programmers and C++ programmers to use Java is to build them the Java wrapper. They sit there tweaking their program from their Java, doing their visualization from their Java front end, and then they have to improve the back end. And they'll start off improving their Fortran, and then they'll move to improving their, writing it all in Java once the Java compilers get good enough and they become fluent enough with Java. So I see that as a natural way of doing it, doing this. We've already mentioned Java servers, which is essentially the way we implement Webflow. So this is Java as the coordination entity, the session management software to implement essentially AVS on the web, which is what Webflow is. Now, something we've deployed today is what I call HPF or MPI on the web, and that is actually even simpler. That is what I would say is using web windows for HPF or MPI. So that's saying just build a web client interface to existing technologies. And let's ignore the last bullet, which is just one particular example, which is building. When you look at these Java interfaces, you can obviously build so-called problem-solving environments. Many people have done this. So you can make domain-specific front ends, and we happen to be building one for adaptive mesh for front ends. Next file. All right, so we've seen this before. So this is our strategy. We've done this one before. Next file. Let's skip this one. All right, so let me briefly mention this application we did, factorization on the web. Next file. So this we demonstrated a year ago. And all you need to know about this problem, so this is the problem of factoring large numbers. And the only important, computationally off of the web, the only really important point is that this is embarrassingly parallel and does not have substantial communication needs between servers and clients. Obviously, you could have if it was embarrassingly parallel but needed an enormous amount of data to go back and forth between the jobs and some sort of accumulation engine, then you would be in bad trouble. This one does not require that. And so it uses, this was done with the people who I believe have the best algorithms in the world to do this. And actually, we have not started RSA 155 because they've not delivered the correct algorithm to do that yet. So RSA 130 we did corresponds to 130 decimal digits. Next file. So the level of parallelism here is a few million. So that's the level of embarrassingly parallelism. So there's plenty of parallelism. It was implemented as a linked set of servers, which then implemented with clients. We actually learned some lessons from this, which basically getting implemented by, well, the one project I'm most familiar with is a project called ARMS at Cornell by Dave Lifka, who is building essentially a web-based resource management system. So this is to manage linked computing resources. This is not a programming environment, but a management environment. And our hardest problem with the RSA 130 and its deployment was the logistics, where we really allowed to use this workstation. And the standard things done by Piranha and Condor and things like that, that management functions, we did not do well in our implementation. But I believe that there's going to be a new generation of professional web-based management systems which will put that in properly. And there's at least one such, and I'm sure there are other such projects looking into that. Because it's not difficult, it just needs more infrastructure and a greater attention to detail, because these ideas have been addressed in some of the many cluster management systems that exist. Next file. Alright, so this file here, let's ignore this file, because this is basically out of date now. This was the old way we did and this one, let's ignore it. These are the implementation we did at the time a year ago, but you know, the web has moved so fast, and you know, by the time we wrote those files, there were not any Java servers, so that's life, you see. By the way, and of course, it is one of the sort of obvious things about using the web, which I think is relatively important, but is that because the web moves so rapidly, you need to be very careful to put your investment in a way it's not wasted. So a lot of your time in web technology is sitting there listening to the drumbeat of the web, trying to work out which way it's going to go, and trying to choose a strategy that has some, which is not going to be totally made irrelevant by future developments, and will basically have some hope of surviving in some fashion, whatever's going on. So I would say we put a lot of activity into such listening to the drumbeat of the web. The software was actually written by Jim Coey of Cooperating Systems, who works with Marina Chen. It was quite an amusing application. It was truly heterogeneous. The smallest system we used was an i386 laptop, and including and the largest an IBM SP2. The software was just written in native fashion. It was C software, which was compiled on the server and placed on the server for each of these systems. So this was a very clumsy technology. It was not some nifty Java applet, which you probably didn't want it to be, because this you must have running very fast, because this is computationally extremely intense. So this is not an example of something you do as a Java applet. You could have a framework as a Java applet, but the actual code that's going to run and do the factoring analysis, that better run as fast as possible, because we want to, this is a very intense computation. So that, even if we wrote it in Java, we would have to run native Java compilers. It was actually written in C. Next file. Okay, so we can. So these are basically capabilities of a lot of. So this was done as CGI. This is this is probably how you would do this probably today if you had to do it today. So this is just Perl CGI scripts, a few thousand lines of code. And these are basically largely management services. So I say this, the abstraction of this project is web-based cluster of meta-computing management, which I would claim is, my list of things you can do, I would claim you can clearly use the web to build wonderful cluster management software and meta-computing management as opposed to programming environment. And that is happening now in at least one place and presumably more. So we're not working in that area anymore because it doesn't seem to be an easy place to make research-wise unique comments. So this was, the C client code, which was downloaded. Maybe nowadays you should make it a plugin or something. Next file. And this is the answer. So you have to multiply those numbers together by the end of the lecture, or else you won't be allowed to leave. Prove that you get the thing. So anyway, that's the factorization of this 130-digit number there, which was finished on April 10th. Next file. Yes, well, the only amusing thing, so this is give you a little bit of light relief. So these people we worked with set up a DigiCrime homepage, and the key person is, instead of having a chief scientist, you have a thief scientist and stuff like that. So this is quite an amusing page. Next file. All right, so I don't really want to spend much. Well, let's see. I don't think I want to spend. I don't think there's much to learn from this, which we haven't already said. Oh, lucky. let's make some remarks on an area which I would view as pretty important today, because I see no reason why you can't just do this in dozens and dozens of cases. But basically, remember, Java is a client-side technology, and it has wonderful graphics. So what we're doing here is just using Java applets to build user interfaces. So this I view as a good industry, because you can build very quickly extremely sophisticated user interfaces. And we will see what we'll see. So next file. So what I have here, let's skip over this one. I want to come back to, I'm not certain what I'm doing here. All right, this is this yucky, this is something nobody can see. I have this on foils. So I'm just going to show a couple of these foils on Webflow. Maybe we can go back one on that foil. I apologize. I think I will look at that. Go back one. Hit previous. So I'm sorry, these foils are a little out of order. I didn't realize. So we put curly brackets around those comments about Java's user interface. This is not Java's user interface, really, although it uses Java in its implementation as a user interface. So the basic, one of the, if you talk about web computing, then effectively you're going to end up generating these compute nets. So you're going to generate, as I already mentioned, I think right at the beginning, any parallel machine in this model, whether it be a set of workstations, set of PCs, or a tightly coupled machine, ought to have in this model a server running on each node. And those servers are the compute nets. So the model we have, and so in some sense they replace in PVM, instead of having a PVM daemon, we're having a nifty Java server as our controller on each node. And you'll see a nice example of that later on, when we see our interface to Pablo, which is a performance visualization system, where one of the nice things you can do is in real time, you can have data transferred from the node program hanging off the server to the server. Then you use conventional web technology to grab the information from the server, and then in real time you can display visualization of performance or other data from your server. So that's an example of how you can use such compute nets to give you a much better programming environment. Now, so if you now come to this. So you've seen lots of these silly diagrams, and they all look the same. That's the problem. That's why I don't want to discuss them too much. Can we turn off? Go to the next file, which is white, and then we won't notice it. I don't know how to turn this. Fine. Good. All right, so what this is meant to be a model of, this sort of symbolic picture is meant to point out how if you took a Java server model, you can imagine all the various services that you want to build computing is essentially implemented as a set of modules or servlets. It's part to be added onto this server. And here are illustrated three components that you would want. you would want the so-called session manager, which is the cluster management software, to tell the system what to do, which programs, which machines to use, etc. You'd want to establish connections between the different servers in the compute net, so that's the connection manager. And then you want the module manager, which is essentially the library system, to go and grab the data, the program, and get it brought in as a servlet so that you can then run it. So this is a typical example of a relatively advanced, because you use one of these Java servers, Java server-based Webflow implementation. As I say, Webflow is unfortunately a moving target, because when we wrote the foils even 9 months ago, the first servers only came out in June. This was Jigsaw. And so basically starting then, we rethought the implementation of Webflow to maybe, instead of being a CGI script-based system, to make it a Java server-based system. And that may only, you know, that's a problem. But this is an example of where this field, where we are, our work is being impacted by changes. So this foil here, which you, I'm not certain if it's in the handout. I think it is.
It is
in this document, yes. So I like this foil, which we keep updating, which points out InfoSpheres is a Caltech distributed computing project. Jigsaw must be Sunsoft, Netscape is Netscape, JavaSoft is JavaSoft, Habanero is NCSA. And they point out that this is a very confused world at the moment. I mean, some people, and so there are a lot of, I mean, there's some nice names like Java Bean. So what is a Java Bean? So it's a module which is bigger than an applet. So. And at least it sounds nice. And I like the concept of linking together a bunch of Java beans. That's sort of neat. So what is this pointing out? So it points out that all the various components that you need to build distributed information and distributed computing systems, they exist in different fashions in these various systems, and nobody quite knows at the moment what the reasonable way to go is. Say, our current choice, I believe, is to use Jigsaw, which is the MIT Java server. But, you know, obviously, there's a lot of commercial and other forces tending to pull different things in different ways. The basic concepts are not going to depend on these particular technologies. Next foil. Is this still? All right. Let's continue. Let's get through. Let's go next foil. That's that wonderful foil we just had. Next foil. Alright, so, as I say, I apologize for the significant disorganization of these foils, which reflects the rapid change in this technology. You probably do not have this foil, because I only built this one recently. So this is yet another foil, which actually keeps, we keep discussing the same things from different points of view, because maybe that's okay, because in this field, different things are emerging from different points of view. this tells you something about Java as a the nature of parallelism in Java. So here I've written down four forms of parallelism. Classic data parallelism, your favorite particle dynamics PDE problem. Modest grain size functional parallelism, such as in the overlap of communication and computation and parallel I.O. object parallelism as seen in distributed simulation and classic object-oriented computing. Coarse-grained software integration, which is here called meta problems. So I would claim that Java does two with the applet mechanism. Three is basically Java objects or applets again. Four is this thing which could be Java beans or some equivalent technology. It's basically the web model. So I would claim that Java has automatically three of these four forms of parallelism. It does not support data parallelism in Java. But if you compare with Fortran, at least, Fortran supports one in HPF. It does not support naturally at least two through four. Next file. So here's basically some comments here about Java and, data parallelism. So I would claim that introducing data parallelism into Java is basically the same as introducing data parallelism into C++ or Fortran. It's sort of no harder or no easier. Namely, in the good old days, I mean, in the old days, we only used Fortran plus message passing or C plus message passing. So today we use Java plus message passing. I think this file is not in your set, I'm sorry. So I would claim Java plus message passing, and we have demos of that which you can see at our booth or during lunch, is quite straight, you know, I mean it's not trivial, but it's here today. Java plus message passing is intrinsic to all these collaborations. You can use it to do simulations today. So there is no problem with Java plus message passing. You might not have the right performance with the current libraries, but I see that as sort of a trivial, as far as I know, that's a relatively trivial implementation issue of today. There's nothing, it's as good or as bad as Fortran, C or C++ plus message passing. The only difficult part of Java is the same thing that's pretty hard in Fortran or C++, which is high-level data parallel model. Next file. Oh, what's this? Oh, well, this is this interface which to this Java plus message passing. Next, you don't have this one. Next file. This is just a simple interface to set up this simple game of life running in parallel under Java plus message passing. Next file. And there's the display of the game of life with the four Java processes. So this is some relatively, historically rather simple standard domain decomposition of a two-dimensional grid under four processors with local communication between the processors. So that's done using Java plus message passing in the same way that we would have done, that we did, you know, people did 15 years ago, similar examples in C and Fortran. Next file. Yeah, so, all right, so here's a useful URL. And if you don't have this URL, I have some pieces of paper with this URL. This is, we had a study of data parallel Java, and I will also have a handout for my Birds of the Feather on Java for Scientific Computing, which will have this URL, which is a study of what I call HP Java I define to be data parallelism in Java, which I would claim to be non-trivial, because it's non-trivial in Fortran and C++. I'm not saying that Fortran plus Java plus message passing is trivial. It's just that I see it obviously works. It has the pluses and minuses of C and Fortran plus message passing. It might have some advantages, but the actual message passing and which applications work and how easy it is to use and whether it's too low level, that's no difference really between Java and Fortran and C. Next file. I happen to have a prejudice as to how to do, which may or may not be the correct prejudice, but we haven't done it. I can't claim to have, in detail, I can't claim to prove this. But we once built a high-performance Fortran interpreter. The reason we built a high-performance Fortran interpreter was that we noticed that was a little like APL. If you look at APL as an interpreted language, the reason it makes sense to do APL or MATLAB as an interpreted language is that the thing you're interpreting are large grain size, they're arrays. So in HPF, there's a thing called an array. I mean, obviously, a lot of the parallelism is built around arrays, at least in the Fortran 90 version thereof. So there is some synergy between this concept of Java wrappers and the concept of building an interpreted interface, which actually could be an interface, a Java interface to HPF, which essentially allows you to manipulate the large grain size at the interpreted level objects. So you have sort of HPArray.matmul will multiply the large-scale objects B and C. It does that by invoking a native library, which is the, probably the C code, which does matrix multiplication. So that's our approach to doing visualization. You have a set of methods which are defined on high-performance Fortran arrays, which then allow you to access those methods, put them into plots, do new plotting, etc., and stuff like that. So the idea is to build an interpreted veneer around running existing high-performance programs which have methods that either invoke high-performance runtime library or extract information from the running program. So here we really would like JavaScript. We'd much rather have a purely interpreted interface than this semi-interpreted interface. This is an example where we want a computer-oriented, fully interpreted language, which I'm sure will happen next file. It just not exists yet. Next file, we don't need that. We have to move on. All right, so I apologize to NIST. Anyway, you handed out a standard. This one didn't have the right contrast. Anyway, they have, NIST has a neat web interface to the their SP2, which here is a screen dump thereof. The contrast could be better. That's my fault. Next file. There's a poster exhibit, you can find out from... So here you can find, I don't know why I did this one, I noticed there was a special interface to Gaussian 90 and things like that. So, maybe I'm wrong. I would view this as a nice example of the web windows approach. You build a beautiful web, a very powerful web API, which takes a lot of the pain away from using these complex systems. Next file. Here, Gaussian 94, submit Gaussian 94 job. Alright, so this is a so there's a good page there which you can find out. Next file. If you read the latest Cornell Theory Center, could you scan that down? Just do here. So obviously this is on the web, so you can read it better on the web. This is a description of the Cornell effort called ARMS. RMS is Resource Management System. I forget what the A is. But this is this web-based distributed management system. It's built off some technology built by Dave Liftger, who used when he was at Argonne and now at Cornell, to schedule SP2s. And he's extended it to schedule a distributed set of systems, and he's built in various security systems. Another Java front end, which has happened to be built by one of our students, and so on. But anyway, there's an article in the Cornell Theory Center Forefront that came a few days ago. Next file. All right, so this file here. Which probably I forget whether this one's in your handout. So this is a similar example, similar concept. This is this web windows interface to high performance Fortran. So my class this semester, computational science, the students are not allowed to log into a real computer. They only log into the web. So this is the idea of web windows. You only see the web client. And it has, because they log into the web, they automatically get a bunch of buttons with predefined HPF programs, etc., and it will automatically compile and run the program on a suitable set of workstations. So this, the idea is to lower the threshold of pain for the user by trying to give a richer set of information resources and and a universal interface which they can access. Next file. And the same technology has been improved by Cornell and made more secure to use as a front end to their SP2. And they were used, so they took that from Kivang Dinso, who is my student, will give a talk at this conference. He built this. So his thesis is meant to be on virtual programming lab technologies. I mean, I would view this as if we thought, again, we're trying to put universities out of business. So we need to have not only virtual classrooms, but virtual programming labs. So this is a virtual programming lab. And that's what I would claim his thesis is. It's the technology aimed at educational applications, which has just a different performance and functionality trade-off from production applications. So again, the same issue of forefronts has a discussion of the so-called HPF virtual workshop that Cornell is building, which the practical, the lab sessions for this, this workshop are using this technology. Next file. So that's the Cornell version of the interface. Next file. My impression is this whole projective lost some of its contrast. Never mind. Next file. What? Yes. Another example of this is the NCSA biology workbench, which is a rich web interface to a whole set of biology programs. I would view that as a pretty interesting, I mean, it's a web, it's again, it's a sort of customized set of interfaces to a large amount of public domain databases and programs for biology. So this is a pretty sophisticated example of using the web's information and compute capability. But notice there's no, this is coarse-grained integration. All this is not, in the case of the HPF interface, the HPF did its own thing and actually could do its own thing without us worrying about the web. Here, this web interface is coarse-grained software integration. We're not running parallelism. It's just linking PCs to databases as compute engines. You're not doing, so you're doing what I claim you can do. You can use the web to do coarse-grained software integration. And you can do it to use user interfaces to fine-grain applications. Those are both very good applications of the web today, which are insensitive to any deficiencies. Next file. All right, so this is yet another example built by one of my students who's actually going to Argonne National Lab. So he built this is a NASA Grand Challenge of data dissimulation. His work on it is finished. It was the first round of it. So he built a Java front end, a Solia user interface, allowing the user to specify which programs run on which computers with which data sets. So here's a graphical front end, which links, when you look in detail, you'll find some of those are programs, some of them are computers, and some of them are data sets. Next file. If you click on these, on the program modules links, you get the programs. If you click on the data links, you get the data. If you can then select, you get told which programs exist for which computers. So this is an example of simply using the web information capabilities to provide a more attractive environment, in this case to build distributed environment. So this is actually a very similar to a specialized application of AVS, if you like, network editing to link to build distributed applications. Next file. So we should be nearly finished, I think. So here's a better, because it's larger, an example of what you if you click on a particular data link. Next file. This by here shows you how it tells you for a program, for this particular program, some features about it. Whether it exists for various particular computers and so on, and how it was compiled and stuff like that. So that you just get these screens when you click on the corresponding icon in that network diagram we showed at the beginning. Next file. Yeah, next file. There are too many of these. Right, next file. Next file. We're nearly finished. We have to finish. All right, so this, maybe I'll finish here. All right, so this is coming back to Kevan Gunce's thesis on virtual programming technologies. So this is work in progress. So you many of you may know Dan Reed's very nice system called Pablo for visualizing the performance of running programs. So we built a sort of web interface to Pablo, so which takes Pablo data, and then Kivang's built 16 Java applets, which basically takes the Pablo data as input and then produces these graphical displays on your screen. So our model for the virtual programming lab is you submit it using some sort of web Windows interface. You then have these, you then can actually have two implementations. You can either come from a client-based or server-based. It's not quite clear which is the best way to do it. But then you can access the data either from the performance data or the scientific visualization data. So he has a Java plotting package for the scientific visualization data. So you can then use Java to, see, it's lucky. MPAC's gone to lunch. So you have to go to lunch. So he is. So the idea is that you can then hand these. So the idea is there's going to be a growing number of Java resources for graphics, plotting, and et cetera. And by linking such capabilities to running programs, we should be able to produce a much better environment for the user, especially for the beginning user. So. All right, so as I said, this afternoon, Dave Warner was here a few seconds ago. Here he is at the back. So we're going to talk about healthcare applications and user interfaces and special novel user interfaces for very high information throughput, which you need for large-scale applications. And so that will be the first part of this afternoon. Thank you.